The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. In the last segment, we heard about the rape of a young woman in New Delhi, India, which sparked nationwide protests. And of course, whenever America looks at situations like this, we look to the third world, we look to the developing world, I should say, and other places, and oh, how terrible that is. But we're talking about America, Steubenville, Ohio. We're talking about everywhere in America, really. It's not just Steubenville. It just happened to have exploded on the scene because of the way it exploded via Anonymous and the web. We are joined by Allison Kilkenny. She's co-host of Citizen Radio, contributing reporter for The Nation magazine, Winston Ross, who is a national correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast, and Jess Myers, director of the Women's Center at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And they join us all here by phone. And Allison, Winston, and Jess, welcome. Good to have you with us. Allison, I was reading what you were writing in The Nation about this, and it's, you know, we do have a tendency in the United States to kind of look elsewhere for the problems.
Right.
And so India really kind of attacked the misogynist nature of its own culture and media. But we're not doing that here, are we?
No, and I just want to emphasize, it's not bad that rape culture is being criticized in India. It should be criticized everywhere.
Right, right.
But establishment pundits do have a habit of, as you're exactly right, looking elsewhere to sort of point out other cultures' problems with rape. But in the United States, we have a terrible, terrible rape culture that's very systemic, from the highest echelons of power trickling down to small communities like Steubenville. And it's unfortunate because Ohio is really, I don't know if this is the right word, but a great opportunity for us to have a conversation about rape culture. But the media didn't want to have that conversation, and it really took Anonymous and other activists, hundreds of people going to Steubenville and demanding justice on behalf of this young girl.
And that's it. Winston, you've been covering the Anonymous end of this and the rally that took place in Steubenville. So I'm to talk to our listeners about how Anonymous kind of, with the role they played, how that even happened, and then what that's unleashed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's become one of the most fascinating things about this case. Basically, Anonymous found out about this, you know, these allegations. And, well, I shouldn't say Anonymous. I should say a group that kind of affiliates itself with Anonymous, because Anonymous is this big kind of amorphous, it's more of an idea than any kind of an organization, right? And a couple of people who appear to be maybe local, at least one of them is local, but calls himself NYSEC or KY Anonymous, found out about this case via a person's blog who'd been writing about it and didn't feel like, you know, there had been enough media attention and didn't feel like enough players had been charged. And this person, KY Anonymous, and contacted another person, a hacker, who goes by the handle Kefsat. The two of them conspired to basically get involved here and you know, seek justice. So they hacked into a bunch of people's email accounts and started making threats about posting people's sensitive you know, documents and information, social security numbers online, unless there was more justice, more football players were charged or public apologies were issued. So they jumped in and decided to play online vigilante.
I mean, there's a certain danger to this, I think. It's important how this has been pushed, I think, by the Anonymous movement. There's also some dangers in this in terms of what vigilantism can do. And, you know, that I mean, how we walk this line between saying no to rape and really going after what's just happened here and using this as a moment to make America wrestle with itself. On the other hand, there's a danger with vigilantism that the innocent get destroyed along with the guilty.
Absolutely. I mean, I've asked these questions like that of the hacker that I interviewed, and you know, he basically says that their efforts represent a lack of faith in the justice system, that they don't trust the courts to punish the guilty, and so they see themselves as kind of supplanting the courts. But the problem is a lot of their evidence is pretty thin. It's based on one person tweeting this or another person tweeting that, and they don't wait for some kind of a jury or any kind of process to just start making the allegations that they make. And so it is very dangerous. I mean, a lot of people can get hurt by what they're doing.
So in light of that, I mean, this is what makes these things so complex, because Jess Myers, I mean, so many people have been writing about the kind of misogynist culture in America and the culture of the sense of sexual privilege and rape that really exists. I mean, so I'm curious what all the complexity of this moment things should be saying to us.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I have the interesting perspective of that I have. I'm often trying to qualify why I have a position like being a director of the Women's Center on campus. A lot of people are like, well, why does that still exist? I thought we've accomplished everything. And I think so often people tend to ignore or just aren't aware that there's this misogyny that exists, not only in the greater culture, but within our campus community. And, when we were thinking about and talking about the impact of social media, my question is that there's students I work with who are very immersed in social media and who come to me oftentimes at first, like, did you see this? Did you hear about this? And others who are completely oblivious to it. And so I think there's an interesting dynamic between how do we educate, in my experience, students on issues of misogyny, where some people get it really well and others don't, and trying to find that middle ground where we can have conversations and discussions where people aren't feeling like they're being challenged in ways that they're not able to listen or to kind of understand their role in it all. That's definitely I'm curious to see when students get back if there will be some conversations around this. Right now, there's no students still on campus, and so curious to see what this will look like when we get back.
Yeah, I mean, and the stuff you've been writing about, Allison, with this, I think is really kind of important. I mean, it's because you can get lost in the danger of vigilantism and going after the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, there is a tricky balance between direct action and vigilantism, as you were saying. But when the justice system is paralyzed,
yes,
as it appears to be in Steubenville, and we're still getting the details, so I don't want to condemn anyone before we fully understand what's going on, but it does appear as though there was a hesitancy in the Steubenville culture to go after these young men or to dig up more details about what happened the night this young girl was raped because of their status as football players. And when you have a culture that has a justice system that's so paralyzed, I think it takes a shock, like hundreds of people coming to your town, to sort of get the public's attention and address systemic rot like there appears to be in Steubenville.
I mean, yeah.
I have to jump in there and say, I think it's worth pointing out that the two football players here who are charged with rape were already charged by the time Anonymous got involved. And so, when we talk about, I think there's certainly an argument to be made that, there's a misogynist culture and that it exists in places like Steubenville, and that football players are too often sort of treated as celebrities. But, there kids charged here. And, you know, from what I could tell, I haven't, it's a juvenile case, the records are sealed, and it's hard to see what the evidence is that the prosecutors were working with, but it was tough for me to see a real clear case to be made that other people should be charged, because it was tough. I didn't see a lot of evidence that anybody else actually knew what was going on, other than that this girl was very drunk and you know, of course, she was being carried around at some point, according to, you know, what I've read. But I think that what's interesting about Steubenville is that even if you can't really make the case that, like, the justice system broke down here or that, you know, it was all totally overlooked, what was interesting about the rally on Saturday was that people were, it was more about just kind of standing up to rape, standing up to, you know, this idea that it's okay or you know, that women are objects or whatever. It's become kind of bigger than being an indictment on Steubenville. And I think that's great. You know, I think that's really important.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that if this sort of becomes a larger discussion about rape culture, then that would be a phenomenal outcome. There is a really big problem with rape culture, not just, you know, young men raping women, but witnesses sort of facilitating that behavior by laughing about how drunk the girl was or saying that the girl deserved it because she was drunk. So I think if, you know, Anonymous and other activists going to Steubenville, drawing attention to this story, even if, you know, these two young men turn out to be guilty and are convicted, that's not going to, like, magically fix the problem of rape culture. So I think if Anonymous can, you know, motivate the public to start talking about rape in a serious way, that would be considered a victory.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Were you about to say something as well, Jess?
Yeah, I was going to just say something to the regards of the proactive and reactive response, in that I think rallies and, you know, the discord that's happening after this is a type of reactive response. But my hope is that with that, there can be some proactive conversations, too, that with this in the media, that we can have some better conversations around what bystander intervention is, or about what rape culture is, because if there's more conversations happening before, you know, where violence happened, hopefully that can be a way to reduce that. But it's so often, I just, my interactions with students is that they're not even sure of what that is, or they might feel like, that doesn't feel right to me, but not know the language for it or not know the resources for that. And so my hope is that, you know, with these reactive cases, that there can be some proactive conversations around all the different ways that it can be addressed in the future. And so that's something that I'm hopeful for, once again, in the case of specifically working with college.
I mean, because one of the things that I was thinking about whatever I just said here, and when you started off, Winston, talking about how the two of the football players have been charged, and I know they're now on home detention awaiting trial or awaiting something. But what you were saying also, Allison, I mean, when I saw, like as everybody else, I think, pieces of this video when it came out, I mean, I couldn't watch it. It was like, whether it was the picture of them holding this girl who had passed out by her ankles, and then the laughter and the joking with these other boys took, whether they took part in it or not, they're all being around it. I mean, there's got to be something that to me is deeper in some way. And that's not right. I was going to say deeper than the rape, obviously. I don't mean that. That some way is as deep as the physical act of rape itself, just in terms of...
Yeah, and I mean, this is where it sort of gets to, like, philosophical territory, where it's like, how could so many people witness something like that and do nothing or think it was funny or make fun of the victim later?
Right.
And, like, that's a complex conversation. You know, we can talk about how we have a culture that dehumanizes women and treats them as commodities or objects to be consumed and sexualizes them, and, you know, young men are sort of excused of the consequences of sexual assault and all of that stuff. But I do think it's interesting and it's telling that certain young men within culture are assigned
a special status. And, you know, I know that these two young men have been, arrested, but for whatever reason, they felt like they could do that and get away with it, and it was okay. And we see this time and time again with certain men within our culture. Sometimes they're professional athletes, and that's at every level of, athleticism, whether it's the NFL or college football or, in this case, local football. They feel like they can treat women in this fashion and get away with it, and that is really an aspect of rape culture.
I think what's really interesting about this case is that if you want to talk about the dangers of online vigilantism, you also have to talk about the fact that it may come about that the consequences of all these kids' actions, the ones who joked about it afterwards, the ones who tweeted about it, and the ones who are, initially committed the alleged crime, they're not just facing consequences in a court of law now. They're facing public humiliation that at least for those of them that are named could follow them for the rest of their lives. And so if there's anything good to come out of, what is definitely a sort of a dangerous game here when it comes to this case in terms of the online vigilantism, it's that maybe it instills fear in the next round of, football players or whoever that think they can just post whatever they want on Twitter or record whatever or do whatever. I mean, they're maybe now they will think about, well, if I do this, I'm going to be, my email is going to be hacked and I'm going to be held up for the whole world to see.
Yeah, and I definitely think it's important that they understand consequences, but I think education is very important too on before the rape happens, educating young men about valuing women and seeing them as equals. That is as if not more important than punishing them once they've done it. I definitely think naming and shaming is really important, and that's why I'm so glad to see Anonymous involved on this level. Mm-hmm. But it also would have been nice if the community of Steubenville had sat down their young men at some point and said, it's not okay to have sex, to rape a drunk girl and drag her around to multiple locations. In fact, it's never okay to force yourself sexually on a young woman because she's a human being. I'm not saying that never happened in Steubenville, but I cannot believe that young men who hurt women this way were ever educated about seeing them as human beings.
And just Myers, I'm curious to take, because you're on campus.
Yes, I am.
So I'm curious, on a campus, I'm curious about the, I know school's out now, but I mean, the kind of reaction to things like this by the students themselves. I mean, I know you're in a school that's not athletic crazy.
With the winter term happening, there's not as many people on campus, but the few conversations I've actually had this week and last week have been with men who have been part of our men's engagement group. It's a group that we just started last semester, which engages men to talk about the different variations of masculinity and what healthy masculinity is. And from them having this new perspective of not feeling like they have to be pigeonholed into a form of masculinity that puts them in a box, they're outraged that this is what people expect from men. They're outraged that that people aren't questioning this and that they want more from themselves and they want more from their fellow men on campus and beyond, of course. And so for me, I have an interesting perspective of working with men who totally get it and want to be better for themselves and women and for their fellow men. And then working with men who just haven't understood what it meant yet because they haven't been personally impacted by it or who don't think that it matters. And so, it's an interesting dynamic to be a part of. And part of our goal here in the Women's Center is to really allow men to understand that there can be other ways in which masculinity can be lived out without thinking that women are objects or without living in a rape culture or being asked to perform violence for, you know, sexual violence.
You know, and that, Allison, and then Winston, you come in as well, but that I'm wondering if this sets something up. I mean, because what took place in Steubenville happens a lot. I was going to say all the time. I can't say all the time, but enough. You know, there I can pull out of my hat five stories in the last several years in the Baltimore region where we broadcast from, where this has happened in high school and other places with taking advantage of young women and raping women and this kind of thing. And I wonder, you know, if it's like when the women's movement reached its began in the 60s and kind of changed, began to force America's consciousness to change about women. And also it was very political in terms of equal pay, equal work, and the rest that happened then. And if we're now at a different stage, and the stage now really is in some ways battling around consciousness, battling around changing the culture, battling around how we as men are raised and how we raise each other and what we are instilled with and what the society puts in this culture that over-sexualizes, objectifies women, creates this world where these kind of things can happen. These are the kind of things I think that while communities have to, Steubenville are going to have to wrestle with what's happened there, in a larger sense, we might be reaching, Alice, in a place where we need to, like, make this the push. This is where we have to go next to change what happens for the generations behind the coming next.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, this is a critical time for feminism. I think, you know, the various women's organizations across the country do great work, but there is a generational divide right now. Some of the leadership in these various organizations are the older women that you were talking about who did amazing things in the 60s. And oftentimes the people on the ground doing a lot of work with, like, one-on-one with, you know, victims and doing educational campaigns that were discussed before are younger women. And younger women, I think, understand that they're in a war right now. Like, the right is aggressively going after women's rights right now. They're dealing with systemic problems like rape culture. They really get that they're in a street fight. And I think sometimes there's, you know, sort of a disconnect between what's happening on the ground and leadership in these organizations. So that's one part of my answer. My other part of my answer is that it's really hard to start talking about rape culture and stuff like that when the example set on a federal level is that women are still not treated as equals in this country. They're still not paid equally. They still aren't afforded basic protections. So I really think we need to start at simultaneously at like a grassroots level on the ground in like places like Steubenville, but also holding the federal government accountable where it's like, rape culture is a big problem. It does have to do with how women are depicted in the media, as I said before, commodified, treated as objects. But it also, on a fundamental legislative level, has to do with the fact that the federal government doesn't say women are equal.
Right.
And that's a big problem, too.
No, I agree.
You know,
go ahead.
The other thing I want to point out here is that if what happened in Steubenville ignites a really important, you know, kind of national conversation about the treatment of women and about rape, it's also, I think it's also a reminder of some ways that this is an even more difficult issue now because social networking allows kids to bully each other in a way that they didn't, with tools that they didn't have before. And a lot of what happened here is, you know, people tweeting and you know, videotaping really ugly things, saying really ugly things about this incident. So my fear is that you have an even bigger mountain to climb now because you're trying to educate kids about you know, how to be respectful to women when there's this explosion happening in the amount of cyberbullying that goes on where the victims are both boys and girls. And, you know, my fear is that you're trying to combat an age-old problem that has sort of a new age set of weapons.
I think you're right. And I,
yeah.
I'm sorry, were you about to say something, Allison, or was that?
Oh, yeah. I completely agree with that. And, you know, I hesitate sometimes to sort of, I don't want to say universally condemn everyone involved in a story like Steubenville, but I am always mindful of the fact that these are extremely young people sometimes making these public statements. And I am just so grateful that Twitter wasn't around when I was young and stupid and didn't know anything. Not that I said anything nearly as horrific as some of the people on Twitter and YouTube said about this poor girl in Steubenville, but that's why I mentioned in my article at The Nation that there has to be a very delicate balancing act between direct action and vigilantism, because if we start to just condemn everybody who had anything to do with this without getting the facts first, that's when it gets into really dangerous territory. And we have to keep in mind also that we are, in the case of this story, dealing with minors who were saying very stupid things online.
I want to thank all of you for this conversation. It's been a very important conversation, and look forward to having you all back again. Allison Kilkenny is co-host of Citizen Radio. You can read her in The Nation as well. Winston Ross is national correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast, who's been covering this and the anonymous aspect of this in Steubenville. Jess Myers is director of the Women's Center at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
We have to take a very short break, but don't go away. When we come back, we'll hear about Idle No More, a movement growing across Canada, where First Nations peoples and their supporters are protesting against the Harper government for Indigenous rights. And then we'll hear about the Ravens and their march to the Super Bowl.